The monastery of St. Frumentius was deserted. The monks had heard the gunfire and the sounds of battle echoing down the gorge and had gathered up their treasures and fled. Nicholas ran down the long, empty cloister, pausing to catch his breath at the head of the staircase that led down to the level of the Nile and the Epiphany shrine where he had stored the boats. Panting, he searched the gloom of the deep basin below him, into which the sunlight seldom reached, but the moving clouds of silver spray from the twin waterfalls screened the depths. He had no way of telling if Sapper and Royan were down there waiting for him, or if they had run into trouble on the trail. He adjusted the tattered and blood-stained bandage around his chin and then started down. Then he heard her voice in the silver mist below him calling his name, and she came pelting up the slippery, slime-covered stairs towards him. "Nicholas! Oh, thank God, I thought you weren't coming!" She would have rushed into his embrace, but then she saw his bandaged and blood-smeared face, and she stopped and stared at him, appalled. "Sweet Mary," she whispered, "what happened to you, Nicky?" "A little tiff with Jake Helm. Just a scratch. But I'm not much good at kissing right now," he mumbled, trying to grin around the bandage. "You'll have to wait for later." He put one arm around her shoulders, almost swinging her off her feet, as he turned her to face down the stairs again. "Where are the others?" He hurried her down. "They're all here," she told him. "Sapper and Mech are pumping the boats and loading." "Tese?" "She's safe." They scrambled down the last flight of steps onto the jetty below the Epiphany shrine. The Nile had risen 10 feet since Nicholas had last stood there. The river was full and angry, muddy and swift. He could barely make out the cliffs on the far bank through the drifting clouds of spray. The 5 Avon boats were drawn up at the edge. 4 of them were already fully inflated, and the last one was billowing and swelling as the air was released into it from the compressed air cylinder. Mech and Sapper were packing the ammunition crates into the ready boats and strapping them down under green nylon cargo nets. Sapper looked up at Nicholas, and a comical expression of astonishment spread over his bluff features. "What the blue bleeding blazes happened to your face?" "Tell you about it one day," Nicholas promised, and turned to embrace Mech. "Thank you, old friend," he said sincerely. "Your men fought well, and you waited for me." Nicholas glanced at the row of wounded guerrillas that lay against the foot of the cliff. "How many casualties?"
3 dead, and these 6 wounded. It could have been much worse if Nogo's men had pushed us harder."
"Still, it's too many," said Nicholas.
"Even one is too many," Mech agreed gruffly.
"Where are the rest of your men?"
"On the run for the border. Kept just enough of them with me to handle the boats."
Mech stripped the filthy bandage from Nicholas's chin. Royan gasped when she saw the injury, but Mech grinned.
"Looks as though you were chewed by a shark."
"That's right, I was," Nicholas agreed.
Mech shrugged. "It needs at least 12 stitches."
He shouted for one of his men to bring his pack.
"Sorry, no anaesthetic," he warned Nicholas, as he forced him to sit on the transom of one of the boats and poured antiseptic straight from the bottle.
Nicholas let out a gasp of pain.
"Burns, doesn't it?" Mech agreed complacently. "But just wait until I start sewing."
"This kindness will be written down against your name in the Golden Book," Nicholas told him. And with an evil leer, Mech broke the seal on a suture pack. As Mech worked on the wound, pulling the edges together and tugging the thread tight, he spoke quietly so that Nicholas alone could hear.
"Nogo has at least a full company of men guarding the river downstream. My scouts tell me that he has placed them to cover the trails on both banks."
"He doesn't know that we have boats to run the river, does he?" Nicholas asked through gritted teeth.
"I think it is unlikely, but he knows a great deal about our movements. Perhaps he had an informer amongst your workmen."
Mech paused as he pricked the needle into Nicholas's flesh and then went on.
"And Nogo still has the helicopter. He will spot us on the river as soon as this cloud breaks."
"The river is our only escape route. Let's pray that the weather stays socked in like this."
By the time Mech had tied off the last knot and covered Nicholas's chin with a Steri-Strip plaster, Sapper had finished inflating and loading the last boat. 4 of Mech's men carried Tessé's litter to one of the boats. Mech helped her aboard and settled her on the deck, making sure that she had one of the safety straps close at hand. Then he left her,
and hurried to where his wounded men lay in order to help them into the boats too. Most of them could walk, but two had to be carried. After that he came back to Nicholas. "I see you have found your radio," he said as he glanced at the fiberglass case that Nicholas had slung over his shoulder on its carrying strap. "Without it we had been in big trouble," Nicholas patted the case affectionately. "I will take command of that boat with Tessé." "Good," Nicholas agreed. "Royan will go with me in the lead boat." "You had better let me lead," Max said. "What do you know about river running?" Nicholas asked him. "I'm the only one of us who's ever shot this river before." "That was 20 years ago," Mech pointed out. "I am even better man now than I was then," Nicholas grinned. "Don't argue, Mech. You come next, and Sapper in the one behind you. Are there any of your men who know the river to command the other two boats?" "All my men know the river," Mech told him, and shouted his orders. Each of them hurried to the Avon he had been allocated. Nicholas gave Royan a boost over the gunwale of their boat and then helped his men launch her down the rocky bank. As soon as the hull floated free, they scrambled aboard and each man grabbed a paddle. As they bent to their paddles, Nicholas saw at once that every man of his crew was indeed a riverman, as Mech had boasted. They pulled strongly but smoothly, and the light inflatable craft shot out into the main stream of the Nile. The Avons were designed to accommodate 16 and were lightly loaded. The ammunition cases that held the grave goods from the tomb were bulky but weighed little, and there were not more than a dozen people in any one boat. They all floated high and handled well. "Bad water ahead," Nicholas told Royan firmly, "all the way to the Sudanese border." He stood at the steering sweep in the stern, from where he had a good forward view. Royan crouched at his feet, clinging to one of the safety straps and trying to keep out of the way of the oarsman. They cut across the current that was scouring the great stone basin below the falls, and Nicholas lined up for the narrow heads through which the river was escaping to the west. He looked up at the sky and saw through the spray that the rain clouds were low and purple. They seemed to sag down upon the tops of the tall cliffs. "Luck starting to run our way," he told Royan. "Even with the helicopter, they won't be able to find us in this weather." He glanced at his Rolex, and the spray was beading the glass. "Couple of hours until nightfall, we should be able to put a few miles of river behind us before we're forced to stop for the night." He looked back over his stern and saw the rest of the little flotilla bobbing along behind him. The Avons were reflective yellow in colour and stood out brilliantly, even in the mist and murk of the gorge. He lifted his clenched fist high in the signal to advance, and from the following boat Mech repeated the gesture and grinned at him through his beard. The river grabbed them, and they shot through its portals into the narrow, twisted gut of the Nile. The men at the oars stopped paddling and let the river take them. All they could do now was to help Nicholas to steer her through any desperate moments, and they crouched ready along the gunwales. The high water in the gorge had covered many of the reefs of rock, but their presence below the surface was clearly marked by the waters that humped up in standing waves of foamed white in the narrows between them. The flood reached up high on either bank, dashing against the cliffs of the sub-gorge. If an Avon overturned, or even if a crew member were thrown overboard, there would be no place on this river to heave to and pick up survivors. Nicholas stood high and craned ahead. He had to pick his route well in advance, and once committed he had to steer her through. It all depended on his ability to read the river and judge her moods. He was out of practice, and he had that tight, hard cannonball of fear in the pit of his belly as he put the long sweep over and steered for the first run of the fast green water. They went swooping down it, Nicholas holding their bows into it with delicate touches of the sweep, and came out into the bottom of it, with all the other boats following them down in sequence. "Nothing to it!" Royan laughed up at him. "Don't say it," Nicholas pleaded with her. "The bad angel is listening." And he lined up for the head of the next set of rapids that raced towards them with terrifying speed. Nicholas steered through the gap between two outcrops of rock, and they shot the barrel, gaining speed down the chute. It was only when they were halfway down that he saw the tall, standing wave below them over which the river leapt. He put the sweep across and tried to steer round it, but the river had them firmly in its grip. Like a hunter taking a fence, they shot up the front of the standing wave, and then, with a sickening lurch, plummeted down the far side into the deep trough. The Avon folded across the middle, the bows almost touching the stern as she tried to pull through the hole in the river surface. The crew were tumbled over each other, and Nicholas would have been catapulted over the side if it had not been for his body line and his grip on the steering sweep. Ryan flung herself flat on the deck and hung on to the safety strap with all her strength as the Avon's buoyancy exerted itself, and the boat bounded high in the air, whipping back elastically into its original shape, then hovered a moment and almost capsized before it crashed back, right side up. One of the crew had been hurled overboard and was floundering alongside, carried along at the same speed as the flying Avon, so his comrades were able to lean out and haul him back on board. The cargo of ammunition crates had tumbled and shifted, but the nets had prevented any of them from being lost over the side.
"What did you do that for?" Ryan yelled at him. "Just when I was beginning to trust you."
"Just testing," he yelled back. "Wanted to see how tough you really are."
"I admit it, I am a sissy," she assured him. "You really don't need to do it again."
Looking back, Nicholas saw Mech's boat crash through the trough just as they had. But the following craft had enough warning to steer clear and slip through the sides of the run. He looked ahead again, and his whole existence became the wild waters of the river. His universe was contained within the tall cliffs of the subgorge as he battled to bring the racing Avon through. He did not know whether it was spray or rain that stung his cheeks, and his wounded chin, and that flew horizontally into his eyes and half-blinded him. At times it was a mixture of the two. An hour later, Nicholas misjudged the rapids again, and they went in sideways and almost capsized. Two of his crew were hurled overboard. Steering fine and leaning outboard, they managed to pull one of them from the river, but the other man struck a rock before they could reach him. He went under and did not rise again. None of them spoke or mourned him, for they were all too busy staying alive themselves. Once Royan shouted up at Nicholas through the rattling spray and the thunder of the river all around them,
"Helicopter, can you hear it?"
Half-deafened, he looked up at the lowering grey belly of the clouds that hung at the level of the cliffs and faintly made out the whistle and flutter of the rotors.
"Above the cloud!" he shouted back, wiping the rain and the spray from his eyes with the back of his hand. "They'll never spot us in this!"
The onset of the African night was sped upon them by the low cloud. In the gathering darkness, another hazard leapt upon them with no warning at all. One instant they were running hard and clear down a smooth stretch of river, and the next the waters opened ahead of them, and they were hurled out into space. It seemed that they fell for ever, although it was a drop of not more than 30 feet, before they hit the bottom and found themselves floating in a tangle of men and boats in the pool below the falls. Here the river was stalled for a moment, revolving upon itself while it gathered its strength for the next mad charge down the gorge. One of the Avons had capsized, and was floating belly up. Even in its highly stable hull had not been able to weather the drop down the falls. The crews of the other boats gathered themselves and then paddled across to drag the survivors from the water and to salvage the oars and other floating equipment. It took the combined efforts of all of them to right the overturned Avon, and then it was almost completely dark by the time they had it back on an even keel.
"Count the crates," Nicholas ordered. "How many have we lost?"
He could hardly credit his good fortune when Sapper shouted back,
11 still on board, all present and correct."
The cargo nets were holding well, but all of them, men and women, were exhausted and soaked through and shivering with the cold. Any attempt to go on in the darkness would be suicidal. Nicholas looked across at Mech in the nearest boat and shook his head.
"There is a bit of slack water in the angle of the cliff," Mech pointed towards the tail of the pool. "We might be able to find moorings for the night."